Welcome. It feels really good to be here because I haven't taught here in probably 15 years or something. Really long time. But I'm from New York originally. I moved to California. I jumped the ship 6 years ago. I live in Northern California, but I'm here quite often, and this is still home. So I appreciate being invited. So we know the topic of today is anxiety. How many of you are feeling it? Yeah, okay. So the good part of that is that you see that you're not alone. This is a topic a day long that I've been teaching for a little while, a few years, and sometimes at least in California, I get crowds of 150 or more. And it's not surprising, really, because of how prevalent this is for a lot of different reasons, a lot of causes and conditions that have come together so perfectly to create anxiety. But fortunately, there are skillful means, lots of tools that we can employ to help ourselves work with, be with, understand anxiety. So I just want to give you a little bit of a brushstroke of what we're going to be doing today. I'm going to do a little bit more of an intro, but I want to introduce Karen Wallen, who's here, if you want to just raise your hand. And Karen is a psychologist, clinical psychologist, and she's also in the, I'm mentoring her in the training that I'm part of with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach. And for days like this, where we're looking at investigating and practicing with something that might be a little bit more acute or even sometimes difficult, I like to have more eyes than just mine in the room and more ears. So if something comes up, I'm not anticipating that. It has not happened before. But if something does, you can just raise your hand, go grab Karen. She's very willing to talk to you. And also just to know that there is a small room, if you haven't been here before, that's out the door and to the right. And if you need to, you can go in there and sit. You can take a breather. You can also just walk in the hall, go get a glass of water. And I think that that's really important to know because, sometimes when we're not feeling our best and something has taken over, it's good to know that there are outs. You can open your eyes anytime you want. You can walk out of the room. You can get a sip of water. You can go lie down in that other room. So please don't feel confined to just this room that we're in. And if you need to go out, just be as quiet as you can be so that we're allowing as much concentration or focus for the people that are still in the room as possible. Okay? We'll take a break sometime mid-morning, and I want to just warn you, sometimes I forget that. So I don't know why, but I do. Anyway, if you need to get up and have a little bathroom break, please feel free to go ahead. And we'll take lunch at around 1 for an hour. So my, yes.
I forgot to mention cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
If you do have
Yeah. And turn them upside down if they're facing you so they're not lighting your face and calling for your attention. One time I was with my primary teacher, Ajahn Amaro, here in New York, and I took him for a coffee. Yeah, monks drink coffee. And we're at this really crowded coffee house near here, coffee shop near here. And he laughed and he said, "Ah, this is the vision of the future. This is about, I don't know, probably 10 years ago or something. Everybody has a blue face." And we looked around and everybody's face was blue from their screen. So it was kind of wild that he pointed that out. I hadn't noticed it because I'd become so accustomed to it, you know. He's in a monastery generally, so of course he's accustomed to it. He's not sequestered, but it's not the typical thing that you're seeing in the monastery. So just to tell you a little bit about why I teach the way I do and why I'm interested in this particular subject. As I started practice, meditation practice, well, I actually came into meditation practice through the yoga door about 40 years ago. I started practicing yoga. And it was out of sort of a necessity in a way. I was in a lot of pain. I was in a lot of physical pain, which then subsequently created emotional and mental pain. And I'm sure some of you know about that. And as a way, you know, because I was in a lot of chronic pain and going from a lot of physicians, one physician to the next, they weren't able for a while to at least find the organic reason for my pain. They told me it was all in my mind. And then eventually there was an organic reason for the pain. They fixed it with some surgery, but the pain didn't go away. So then it was like, oh, it is definitely in your mind. So at one point I thought, well, then what do I do with my mind? Because when I would ask the physicians, and this is a long time ago, this is in the early 80s, well, what do I do about my mind? You know, they kind of looked at me like, you know, didn't really have a very good answer for me. And this was in the days when it was a little bit more cowboy territory as far as mindfulness and meditation, you know. It wasn't as popular as it is now. And so I thought, well, okay, how do I deal with my mind? And I eventually found my way into a Goenka Vipassana retreat and then jumped over to Insight Meditation Society after that and stayed. And I would do a lot of retreats each year because I felt that I needed to, and it was really helping me cope with what I needed to work with at the time. And then, of course, not only did it help me cope with what I needed to cope with and be with, I was eventually out of chronic pain through a process of many different practices. But I was still discovering things about my mind, my heart, my body. And so, of course, flash forward, you know, almost 30 years later, I'm still investigating. And it was out of that that I began to teach because, you know, there's just so many things, fortunately, that have been passed to us through thousands of years that we can apply now to our current situations from the Buddhist tradition, from different yogic traditions that are really helpful and practical. So we will be, you know, my meditation practice and just my life in general is very body-based in just because I got used to that. I needed to know my body. I needed to understand the relationship between my body and my mind. And at first, there was no relationship between my body and my mind. You know, I really wanted to push my body away. It didn't feel well. But over time, I was able to become friends with my own body and actually in my own mind and then my own heart. And, you know, fortunately, I like myself now. That took a little while. Made friends with myself in general. And all of this is through the tools of contemplative psychology, which really is Buddhist psychology in my mind. Different somatic practices, which we'll practice today, and just general mindfulness. but with a large dose of kindness in there, and compassion to whatever it is that we're meeting. So the way that the day is going to be structured within what we do is going to be a little bit different than what you might have typically encountered coming here or to a Dharma center or to go and meditate for a day long or something like that. And that is because of the topic that we're going to explore and also because of historically how I've come into these practices. And what I want to be able to complement, bring in, of course, mindfulness and meditation. We're going to be doing some visualization, some breathing, and eventually one restorative pose that comes from the yogic tradition. But I want to complement what most of us might have already explored, which is more of the top-down, mind-only talk therapy, or even internal analysis or trying to figure out, why am I anxious? What did I do to cause this? What can I do about it? But more from the cognitive aspect of our being, our thinking mind. So how many of you tried traditional or are doing traditional psychotherapy now to work with your anxiety? Okay, great. And how about meditation apps? Are any of you working with them? Excellent. For anxiety in particular. Yeah, great. And you're here to add tools, I would imagine. Yeah. So here's the good news, is that I don't want to discount anything that we already are doing, because I think it's really, really important and has tremendous value. But what I would like to do today for you is add, to complement and add to what you might not be receiving, or give you a chance to really sink into the body, the somatic, the felt sense a little bit more, so that it becomes additional skills, skillful means or tools for you that you can add to what you're doing already. Okay? So it's not meant as a replacement by any means, but it is meant as a complement to what you are already doing. And I think that the one thing to keep in mind as we hopefully are curious about what goes on in our minds and our bodies today is that, again, we're not alone. And no matter what we're encountering, no matter what is coming our way, whether it be from an internal source that may be real but not necessarily true, or an external source, same thing, is that we want to be kind to whatever it is. Now that takes some cultivation, doesn't it? So, you know, one of the standard definitions of mindfulness is paying attention on purpose. And then later, probably a decade later, it was added with kindness or compassion or without judgment, right? That's not so easy. It's not automatic to be non-judgmental to what we experience. It needs to be developed, I believe. It needs to be cultivated. That's in my direct experience, and that's in my experience of teaching thousands of people. So I want to suggest the kindness aspect, but I don't expect you just to be kind to yourself because you've heard it again. So just know that and be okay with that if you can be, because it is something that we can develop. So there is this, you know, before I teach anything, I like to look and see what the current research is. Because I think it's interesting, you know, like some of the neuroscience and the research is catching up to what we contemplatives already know. I was with one of my most favorite teachers Minja Rinpoche, and probably some of you know of him. And he, this is probably about 12 years ago or something, and he was attending one of the Mind Life conferences here in New York. And he was staying with me, and I had the privilege, the honor of hosting him for sometimes weeks at a time. And he came back to the apartment, and I said, "So how are you finding the conference?" And it wasn't the first one he'd been to, but he said, "Oh yeah, it's very good." And he said, "You know, the scientists, they're trying, they're catching up." And he laughed. And I think that that's still the case, actually, because, you know, the mind is, consciousness is tough to pin down, isn't it? So no matter, you know, the fMRIs might show us different parts of the mind, the brain light up and, you know, different kinds of somatic responses and things, but we do in this culture definitely validate things through research, so that's okay. I'm glad that there is some. So I found this survey. It's from an online resource called One Mind Dharma, and it asks people, why did you start meditating? And 82% said to help with anxiety. 82%. And then 62% said that they started meditating just to investigate. 45% said to build focus. 34% said to work with stress, or work stress, excuse me. 31% family stress. 23% said a friend or family member. Now, I don't know if that meant working with a friend or family member, or a friend or family member said, "You better start meditating." You know, it could go either way. And then 18% said to help with addiction. That's pretty interesting, I think, isn't it? So again, we're not alone. Anxiety is prevalent. There are a lot of reasons to be anxious. But again, I think that there are a lot of ways to counteract that. So I don't want to focus on the reason so much as I do want to focus on what we can do to facilitate our body, heart, and mind remaining as healthy and vital as possible, even with the stresses of, you know, the world today. So what I'd like to do to start our practice is some breathing. And again, I'm going to tell you what we're going to be doing before we do it, because I want you to have the option of, you know, because I want you to be able to check in and notice how you're feeling and be able to say, you know what, no, that I don't think that's really going to work for me right now. And if it's not, then I want you to just sit quietly, or you can take a break and do something that is helpful to you, okay? Because there's, you know, if you are feeling anxious, there's nothing worse than someone telling you what to do about it. And, you know, just breathe. Well, if I could just breathe, I probably wouldn't be in this anxious state. You know, so we're going to be doing a little bit of breathing practice for about 10 minutes. Okay, it's just so you know how long that might be. And this is to bring us a little bit more into the present moment and to become a little bit more embodied. And also this breath practice will help us regulate our nervous system.